Welcome, everyone, to the Apocalypse Podcast. I'm Steve. He is...
Dr. Lawrence Van Beek.
Yes, said with a certain amount of resignation. I am Dr. Van Beek.
Yes.
Folks, we're back. We've gotten the band back together. We're all back in our proper place. No, we're not back in our proper places, but we're back in places where we'd rather not be sometimes. But let's not digress. Or we could digress.
Let's digress.
Let's digress.
Oh, we are doing the Book of Revelation.
Oh, right.
Again.
You know, we thought, let's make everything old new again. Right? I think that's our shtick, right? Let's make everything old new again.
That is our shtick. That is,
or is it something
doing?
Green, something old, something new. No, that's
we right. Felt that the last one, the volumes were off and wrong, and we thought maybe people weren't listening because of the sound quality rather than because of the content. So we thought, well, let's do it again. And yeah. It'll probably be pretty much a rehash of the old one, but nothing's ever the same.
No, it's always going to be better.
Or different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you'd like to enjoy the same content that you've heard before in yet a different form, we've got a podcast for you.
That's true. We did feel, Steve, that since many people are starting to talk about the end of the world again.
Yes.
Not everybody, but many are, that maybe it's another chance to look at this book and to say, hey, John was speaking to a very specific audience. That audience was not us.
Yeah.
But there are truths that we can pull that will apply to us.
Yeah.
And that's what we're going to do.
Yeah. Nice job. Nice job.
Thank you.
So, Larry, I mean, like I was saying to you earlier before we started the cameras rolling, I know you can't see Larry, but trust me, he looks like a $1 million bill tonight. Lynn, that one's for you.
I say that particularly for my wife's sake because it annoys her so bad all the time.
Maybe even a $10 million bill if they made it.
And if I had that, I would go home.
That's right. And we'd all scream, take me with you.
We play tennis at Wimbledon.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's going to happen.
Yes. Lunch in the little cafe they have there with clotted cream and a scone. Oh.
Yes, and the strawberries they have, the strawberries.
Yes. 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 I've had that there.
The champagne because I'd lose my job. But.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know. Okay, so Larry, like I was saying to you before, even on the way into work this morning, I heard somebody talking about how this was almost an apocalyptic time, like it was something out of the Book of Revelation, and they were mixing COVID in with things like the wildfires in California and in Oregon and Washington State. And it's interesting how people invoke that imagery so soon when they see something like COVID hit, right?
And it's a fair thing to do. If you can do a historical view, and even just an anecdotal scattered historical view,
okay.
You find that people in the Napoleonic War, the Orthodox priests actually felt that Napoleon may have been the Antichrist, and that this was the end of time. In the Second World War, so many people thought this has to be the end of time. I hadn't heard about the First World War. So I won't say it, but it's, you know, we could maybe throw it in, right?
Okay.
During the Spanish flu epidemic, when so many people died. So all of these kind of things that hit a larger area caused people to say, this is the end. This is the end of the world, right? And even scientists and stuff, they have the end of the world clock. I forgot what they called that now.
The doomsday clock.
And last year, I think they said it was, they say 1 minute to midnight or?
Something like that.
Yeah, like they're really pushing toward midnight. And it had to do more with, at that time, because this other pandemic hadn't hit yet, but it was to do with global warming. Mm-hmm. And it often has to do with nuclear waste,
right.
Nuclear bombs everywhere.
Yeah. George Bush, that all you want. I don't care.
Yeah. He had me convinced there was nuclear and nuclear,
but I see what you mean, right? Because people look at those things and make that assumption that that strife that we experience on a certain level must qualify as this is the thing that is a sign.
This is the big one. You remember the guy from Sanford and Son? He'd always hold his heart. And this is the big one now. This is the
I'm big coming one. Home. I'm coming home, Louise.
And people think that this is the big one, and we don't know. We don't right. know. You know, it seems to be spreading and calming down at the same time. We don't know where it's going to go, right? Mm-hmm. And we don't know what all of the other pieces hold. These are the uncertainties, and these are the things that make people go back to the Bible and say, who are those prophecy guys saying? What were they saying in Thessalonians? And what were they saying about Daniel? And, you know, and particularly, what are they saying about Revelation right now? And they go back in and they start pulling things out. Even in the 70s, when this was so popular, for some reason in the 70s, people said, you know, reading Revelation is like reading your daily newspaper.
You know? Wow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But we got through the 70s, and now it's, you know, it's 50 years later, if you can believe that, and people are finding reason to say this. Well, and it's fair. If you're scared, it's fair to say, what is God doing on the earth? What's he doing on this planet? And particularly, what's he doing with me? And I think that's why another run through Revelation wouldn't be a bad thing at all.
Now, Larry, my question for you, and I think I've asked you this before, and forgive me, folks, if you heard this the last go around, but Larry, is this a first world, third world difference? Is there differences based upon culture on how we view Revelation?
Revelation used to be, like the whole dispensational view of Revelation, the whole idea that there's going to be a 7-year tribulation, and then Jesus is going to return and a 1,000-year reign. And then it's all going to end, and there's going to be the new heaven and the new earth and all that. That used to be very much a North American view.
Okay.
Now, and it started in North America. It started Darby in the 1800s. He started it, and it was very, very popular in the United States and then in Canada as well. It wasn't as big a deal at all in amongst European Christians.
Okay.
And for the rest of the world, it varied quite a bit, but it was an American thing. It did transfer from, because American evangelists went around the world and brought this message with them, and people absorbed the message and picked up on it. So it became more of a worldwide thing.
Okay.
But it suited America very well. Hmm. It suited the evangelical mindset in the United States and in Canada very well. So it fit us quite nicely.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
We used to say, well, it's a little different for the parts of the world in what we used to call the third world, but things are changing rapidly, aren't they?
Yeah, true.
I don't even know, do we use that term so much anymore, but what we used to call the third world, like that was the poorest part of the planet. And people were dying, you know, of many things. Dysentery was a big issue. Child mortality was a big issue. So they had other things on their mind.
Right.
But the idea of dispensationalism fit North America very well.
Okay.
And just in fairness, there it's one of the valid views of Revelation, because we're going to go a little different way with it, the way we do it. But we always want to make sure that all of our dispensational people know that this is a valid view. There were real scholars that were dispensationalists, really good scholars.
Yeah.
Albert was a popular scholar, but he was also a good scholar.
Right.
And he was dispensational.
Yeah.
And well, so even though I'm going to disagree with him, I'm not going to poo-poo his ideas.
Yeah, and like you said many times, it's not like the book is so self-evident that there is a single line of thought that we can always say that this is always the path through that.
That's right. For when I was in college and in seminary, our teachers would espouse a view that was what we called futuristic and something else at the same time. So they would be futurist preterists. So they thought that Revelation applied to the first century, but also to our future. Mm. And so there was a movement away from straight future ideas And of course, present ideas, if you think the world's coming to an end right now.
Right.
But so people were starting to say, hey, there's other ways of looking at this. There's other things going on. But then we all, everything goes too far, right? They started saying, well, those people, you know, the people on TV and the McDowells and the other guys, they're nuts. Their ideas are just worthless. But that's not true either. Even though I'm not going to go there, and I know my ideas are right, and they're the way the whole world should believe, you know, not everybody's going to agree with me.
Well, there's certain things you have to learn, right? Like, you know, you don't start a land war in Asia.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. The most important thing is, don't start a land war in Asia.
And you don't start an argument about Revelation.
With a Dutchman, because we're miserable people. Yeah. So anyway, Revelation is it's a very good book. It's well worth looking at. And you know that as I go through this book, I have one idea and all of a sudden I have another idea. And I don't consider myself a lesser scholar just because I can't completely grasp everything that's there. You know, because I also have a very high opinion of myself. So. What do they call that? Humbly proud, not proudly humble. But I think it's a very valuable book. And as we're going to find out, he was writing to a church, and he was preparing them to die. So this book has a very strong death motif all the way through. And that's going to be an important part of what we talk about. And in any kind of a drastic circumstance that happens on the planet, someone that's preparing you to die and is preparing you to face God and is preparing you for the absolute sovereignty of God and of Jesus Christ, that's going to be an important message for everybody. And that's what Revelation, I think, does the best.
Interesting. Yeah. I know you and I, again, off camera, off podcast, I talked a lot about that death motif weaving its way through it. And so is John seeing the persecution that's happening? God has given him this vision, and then therefore this is a very simple way of him turning around and giving that back to the church, saying, if you could see what I have seen, prepare thyself, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, very much so. John actually has a vision of heaven, and there's very little about heaven in Scripture. I've read some people that say, you know, I know what heaven is, but they're usually talking about the new earth and things like that. They're not talking about heaven itself. But there are two people in Scripture that have been to heaven for sure and mentioned it, and that was John, and he does it in apocalyptic language, and Paul, who does it where he says, I knew a man who went to the third heaven, whether in the body or out of the body, I do not know, and he saw unspeakable things. And so Paul's saying, I was there, I don't even know exactly what was going on, but what I saw, I don't even know how to relate it to you. And that's how wonderful it was. And John sees it in Revelation 4 in terms of lights and sounds. And he says, and he just kind of gives this vague image of what's going on in the heavens that he can see, right? And then the book keeps taking you from earth to heaven.
Right. It's kind of interesting that Paul says, I have no idea what I was seeing. And for John, Jesus and the angels and the Father himself, probably, right, is explaining exactly what he's seeing and what exactly is occurring. It's time.
Weird because what he's seeing is lights and sounds. He's not seeing things that you can really nail down in our world. He's seeing, it's something C.S. Lewis said. He did a thing called the weight of glory.
Okay.
And he said, you know, in those days, you know, no TV, no internet, no, you know, you're doing, all you have is a radio. And he said, it's like explaining a trip to the ocean, because you're in England. I mean, you're not that far from the ocean. He says, like trying to explain a trip through the ocean to someone from the ghettos. They have nothing to hang the images on. They got, there's nothing in their experience to understand what's happening out there. So you use images from their experience to show them what's happening. And that's what John does in Revelation.
Oh yeah. Well, what they call it? Is that the concept of scaffolding, right? You know, you're building a structure and then putting siding around it that makes it firm for the folks to understand.
Oh, that's nice. I like that. Yeah.
Okay. Anything else that we should do from an introductory podcast to the Book of Revelation?
No, probably next week we'll again talk about the four views of Revelation, because that's always the standard. You know, you have to know the different ways that people approach the book.
Yeah.
And we'll just talk about a little bit about when it was written. I'm still going to say 85, in the year 85. Some people still think they push it back to Nero and they put it to 60, and we'll talk about that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So next week will be a kind of a setting the scene, and then we'll get into the book itself, and we'll do our normal thing, Steve, and go chapter by chapter through the book.
Okay.
And just enjoy ourselves, I hope.
Yeah. Yeah. We will enjoy ourselves. Folks, we want you to come on this journey. And we didn't do this because we ran out of ideas of things to do. This is actually because we thought it was more timely in this period of history, but just in general, as we keep hearing these reverberations of apocalyptic language throughout our society and culture and even our churches, right? We talk a lot about this, it's a good time to just step into this and look at it again.
As we always say, Steve, one day the guy with the sandwich board on the corner saying the world will end, one day he'll be right.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like a stopwatch.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't forget the rule. Weathermen and prophecy people are the only people that can get everything wrong, and we still listen to them every day.
Can you imagine a weatherman in the Old Testament times? Like, man, I'm not so sure I want to get this wrong because I hear they kill these guys. Well, what's tomorrow going to be like? Well, could be sunny. Might be cloudy. I don't know.
In BC, they'd always say partially sunny in the morning, changing to partially cloudy in the afternoon.
Chance of rain.
Always accurate in BC, but.
That's right. All right, folks. Well, thank you for joining us. Welcome back. We're good to be, we're just happy to be back along with you. And we'll look forward to seeing you next week on the Apocalypse Podcast.